Hello and welcome to Last Week in AWS. Let's get after it. New Amazon CloudWatch metric monitors EC2 instance reachability to EBS volumes. In yet another mildly confusing turn of events, AWS now lets you know if your EBS volumes are reachable, and I'm left pondering a more fundamental question. When exactly did EBS volumes learn to play hide and seek, and why wasn't I informed? Well, I mean, I suppose I was informed when the entire instance spiked its load average to 700 and went completely non-responsive as everything blocked, but I didn't exactly need a detailed CloudWatch metric to tell me that. Further, I can't remember the last time an EBS volume went on walkabout. Seriously, what am I missing here? Announcing AWS Lambda's support for Internet Protocol 6, IPv6, for outbound connections in VPC. Huh, nobody gave a crap about IPv6 support for a bunch of our services, but now they're screaming at us to give it attention. I wonder what... Wait, what? We're going to start charging for IPv4 addresses in February? Oh, crap. Announcing new AWS Network Load Balancer, NLB, availability and performance capabilities. This unlocks some new capabilities in conjunction with the Route 53 Application Recovery Controller, or whatever it's named. I'm too lazy to check because I'm on a deadline, and it's too expensive for me when I use it as a database. Zonal Shift is a game changer for some things, and I'm still shocked that Kubernetes isn't inherently aware of a similar concept when it comes to AWS AZs. 2 billion downloads of Terraform, AWS provider, shows value of IAC for infrastructure management. Nobody's suggesting that there are 2 billion people who know what AWS is, let alone use it via Terraform. Nobody is suggesting that there are 2 billion AWS accounts. So what exactly is the point of this vanity metric? Why purpose-built artificial intelligence chips may be key to your generative AI strategy. If your generative AI strategy, which you should not have at this time, requires bespoke silicon only available from a single cloud provider to effectively execute upon, perhaps you should stop letting ChatGPT chair your board meetings. How Zalando migrated their shopping carts to Amazon DynamoDB from Apache Cassandra. In a typical, everyone look, someone else did it, so you should too, propaganda post, AWS is chest thumping about Zalando's hard work shifting from Apache Cassandra to Amazon DynamoDB. Shockingly, they forget to mention all the late night hours and half-eaten pizzas that were casualty to this simple migration. Unlocking cost optimization. OpenRaven's journey with Amazon Aurora IO Optimize leads to 60% savings. You know what sucks about this? That 60% savings is artificial to AWS's own billing dimensions and an outgrowth of Aurora's IO charge that's impossible to predict without running the workload itself to figure out what it's going to cost you. All that OpenRaven did here was switch to the IO optimized setting, and as a result, each Aurora instance costs more per hour, but that IO charge goes away. This is something that AWS could absolutely provide as a just how it works without requiring human involvement, but they don't. Also, realize what this means. OpenRaven was using Aurora, and the majority of their spend was just on that bullshit IO charge. What? How does cloud enable the transformation of bank finance functions? This feels less like a blog post title and more like a hard question that some bank exec asked their AWS sales rep during the sales meeting. And finally, this one's going to take a minute or two. AWS Cloud Institute, virtual training program for cloud developers. So my original take on this program was that it was offensively disgusting, and my reaction was more than a little bit unhinged. Learning new skills, yes, that's important, and if that's where it stopped, I would have had my full-throated endorsement. But it costs folks $7,500 and a year of their lives to learn what I assumed were entry-level skills surrounding a single vendor's view of the world, with that money being paid directly to that vendor. That's a big lift for folks fresh out of high school. I reached out to some folks at AWS to gain clarity before shooting my mouth off in public. I know, what a concept. And found my opinion changing. This is beyond a typical bootcamp approach. There's a lot of emphasis on business skills, on understanding the interplay of workplace dynamics, and individualized support. Large customers were asking for this. Now, the write-up doesn't do a great job of explaining the value. In my read-through, I thought the artifacts basically were a cloud practitioner certificate and a digital badge for LinkedIn or whatever. Instead, there's a capstone project, a series of discussions with potentially interested employers, and the start of a professional network. So, should you do it? Well, here's a quick question to ask yourself if this is appealing to you. Imagine that you have $7,500 and a year to invest into your career. Is this the best use for those resources that you can find? If you're seriously considering this or anything like it, including a degree or a boot camp or anything like that, before you drop thousands of dollars and, more expensively, that kind of time, find a few people who are doing the job you hope to be doing in 3 to 5 years. Take them out for coffee. It'll be the best investment you can make. Ask them what they wish they'd known when they were in your position and what they advise you to do. If you can't find someone who fits the profile, well, reach out and talk to me. I owe a lot of people favors that I can only pay forward. Just please don't hurl your money at anything like this without some very serious thought first. And my thanks to the folks at AWS who took the time out of their day to walk me through their thinking rather than assuming I was just on one of my nut bar rants again. I like what you're building. Keep going. And that's what happened last week in AWS.